Hey, how's it going, everyone? Welcome back to the show. Today's episode is part one of a two-part series with my friend Micah. We recently sat down and had a little chat over some coffee. Well, at least I did. And we just kind of caught up with life. We haven't talked since last October. We've just been busy. Both of us have been really busy. Micah is a lead ramp agent at Alaska Airlines. He is based in Salt Lake City, and he's also a student pilot. He is also an aviation photographer. He is also an avid simmer. And honestly, I am jealous of him because he is only 19 years old, and I wish I was as focused as he was when I was his age. But I had a lot of fun talking with him. We talked about just catching up and about his job. And also, we did some aviation hot takes. One of our listeners actually submitted some questions, and I thought it was a really fun idea, so I included it within this episode. Anyways, I'm going to stop talking. Let's get the show on the road. From the Baltimore studios in Colorado Springs, Colorado, this is the Tailwinds and Sunshine podcast.
You know, I don't know if that's your intent, and just kind of start the conversation from there, you know, because I've found out that sometimes when you communicate that, the person was not even aware they were doing that, and they'll back off a little bit.
Possible pilot deviation, I have a number for you. Advisor to copy.
Dude, this 777 has been really fun to fly. It's honestly just a bigger Embraer 175.
But the fact that they were sitting on that runway knowing there was a heavy coming their way, unacceptable.
I'm from the central part, so I'm from a town we have more cows than people where I come from. Very country.
The aches I have, I can go on. Number one, when the jet bridge is pulled back and we're ready to push and you guys don't have your headsets on.
Plan has to be perfect because you can't turn left. You can't turn right. The only way out of that, if the pilot gets into a bad spot or if there's something that's like happened at the airport that shuts down a runway, the only way out is up.
And now, he always forgets the code to the jet bridge. Yours truly, Manny Ramirez. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. This is episode 24. Let's get it on. No option but to get it on. Mandate get it on, as Adam Carolla likes to say. Today, I have a special guest with me today. Micah is a ramp agent for Alaska Airlines in Salt Lake. And we've been trying to get this episode going just as long as Patrick's episode because we didn't like the product that we put out last time. And I think we were doing an Instagram live, and I think Micah had like the side of his face, and we're like, no, I didn't like that. Let's do it again. So we decided to just, you know what, let's scrap it. And let's start from scratch. And here we are again. Micah, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it again.
I'm glad you're here. What have you been up to, man?
Dude, since I last talked to you, oh my gosh, so much has happened. I got promoted to a ramp lead, so I'm a ramp lead now. I'm the one, you know, running everything on the ramp and coordinating between us and, you know, upstairs with the gate agents and everything. I've also gone on a couple trips too. I got on a non-rev trip and I got kicked off at the end, so that was fun.
You got what at the end?
I got kicked off. Well, I guess more like,
oh, you got kicked off,
and then I got stuck in Seattle for a little bit, so that was kind of fun. But
I mean, right. Yeah. So now, for those that don't know about that, you know, you're getting bumped off, meaning that your seniority could not hold a seat in that particular flight, and you got asked to either deplane, which is the worst case scenario. But sometimes I don't know how it works at Alaska, because I've actually only non-revved at Alaska once, but it wasn't at SkyWest. It was when I used to work for ATS, for Airport Terminal Services. Oh, okay. Back when I was like 19, and we used to service Frontier Alaska and Aloha. And yeah, anyways, that's the only time, and I only non-revved once. But in recent history, I've never flown. But typically it's good. You see the list of people that are on standby above you, and before you get on the plane, you'll know if you're not going to make it. But did you literally get bumped off the plane, or did you just not make it down the list or up the list?
Well, okay, so I got my boarding pass and everything, and I went up to the gate agent. She scanned my boarding pass, and she didn't see a paid ticket on there. And she's like, "Oh, step to the side for a second." I'm like, "Okay." So we're at the ticket counter. It's like D20 at this point. We still got 20 minutes left. There's 80 seats open. I'm like, "Oh, this is gonna be no problem." She's like, I don't see a paid reservation on your ticket. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't need one because I'm flying out at ID90. I don't, you know, I'm flying standby. And she's like, oh, okay.
Right.
And she's on the phone with her supervisor for like a few minutes. And she's asking me some other questions about my company and what I work for and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a ramp agent. I do ramp for Alaska and Salt Lake. And they're like, oh, okay. And D10 rolls around and she's like, oh, I can't put you on this flight. And I'm like, what? Why? There's 80 seats open. And why? She's like, oh, I don't see a reservation. Or I'm like, but I'm like, what? I don't need one.
Oh, no.
And so I just get bumped off. I go to the CSA help desk, and the lady I talked to there said, oh, I don't know why she couldn't have put you on. You're flying out of 9090. I'm like, that's what I was saying.
Wow.
So that was the last.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. That was the last flight for the night, unfortunately, to Salt Lake. So
Where were you trying to come back? So where were you at? And where were you? I'm assuming you're trying to get back to Salt Lake. Where were you at?
Yeah. So I had non-revved up to Sitka. And it was actually just like a 1 day trip,
where is that?
Or I guess 2 day trip. It's up in like the kind of little panhandle, like by Ketchikan, you know, like in the
is this in
southeast.
Canada?
No, Alaska.
Oh, shoot. I have no idea. I'm really bad at it. I have never heard of that before. What? But then when you, that just the sound of it sounded like Canadian.
Oh,
it sounded really Canadian. So I was like, Canada?
Biggest city by
Alaska.
Land area.
Gotcha.
Biggest city by land area.
Oh,
and I didn't know that until like a week ago, so way after I went there. But
missed opportunity when you were there, huh?
I had went up there for like kind of a day and a half trip. I went there and I spent the night and whatever. I was supposed to get on connecting through Seattle. I was supposed to get on the flight to Ketchikan, then to Sitka. But the flight to Ketchikan was overbooked by like 7 people. So I decided to take the flight about 5 hours later to Juneau and then to Sitka. So I was in Seattle for like 10 hours.
Damn.
Yeah. And so
you see, this is what can happen if you're really trying to get to a destination. If something's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong, right? You're going to get bumped off a flight. You're not going to make it. You're going to be stuck at an airport for 10 hours, right? So if you follow my non-red footprint, that'll help you kind of use your benefits a little bit more. But definitely when you're trying to get to a location, it's going to be a little bit difficult. You're going to have to be super flexible, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to end up like Micah, stuck, you know, at an airport for 10 hours. But that's the reality of non-rev, right? But, you know, going back to the gate agent, for those new to the non-rev game, you are going to get inexperienced gate agents, right? And this is just, I think, either inexperienced or just no proper training, or maybe cross-trained, because some of these gate agents are cross-trained to do several things, right? So you may get someone that doesn't know, so they might have to call a supervisor to actually get that done, because like the CSA agent told you, is like, I don't see why they weren't able to put you on that flight, right? So now there's an empty plane and you didn't get on it. So that really sucks, man. I'm sorry. Something similar happened to me. I didn't get bumped off though, but recently I listed for the jump seat on Delta, and there was like 80 seats open in the plane.
Wow.
And I went to the gate agent, and she's like, I showed her my employee badge. She's like, okay, what's your employee number? And she put it into the computer, and it's kind of both. It was both our faults, because I didn't know the proper employee number to give her. And she didn't know what employee number to ask of me. So I gave her my SkyWest employee number. And she's putting it in there. And it's like, no, it's not letting me. It's not letting me. It's not letting me. So she called a red coat. The red coats are Delta, are just kind of like the supervisors. And she came and she's like, oh, I don't know what. You know, she was also unaware. But then I realized maybe it's my like designated Delta employee number, because with SkyWest you have to list at the gate for the jump seat or not for the jump seat. So I went there and I gave her my SkyWest. They give you like a dedicated Delta employee number,
right?
And I gave them that and it worked, but it took some kind of like investigative process, kind of like head scratching a little bit to get it done. So if you get to the gate and the gate agent doesn't know how to list you for the jump seat, just ask for a supervisor. Don't, you know, try something else, so that way you don't get left behind. And what else? I know the last time I saw you on your story, you posted, you shared the podcast and your story. You were going to Arches National Park.
Oh, yeah.
When was that?
That was a few weeks ago. Me and my buddy Jackson, we just decided to, the week before, we're like, we should just go on a road trip somewhere. And we're like, okay.
Yeah.
So we found a date that we both had off, and we're like, let's drive down. Well, we were thinking about driving down to maybe Vegas or Boise or Denver, but we didn't want to go to Boise because it's probably cold up there. And I don't think the weather going along the trip looked good either. And then the trip to Denver kind of looked iffy going through the mountains on I-70 and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vegas.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot to do in Vegas, but I don't know what we would do in Vegas, honestly. There, I mean, we can't gamble or anything.
How old are you?
So I'm 19.
You see? Yeah, definitely Vegas would have been, you know, there's still stuff to do. There's plenty to, you know, stuff, eat and everything. But when you think Vegas, you think gambling, right? You think going to casinos. But being underage, and if you get asked to leave, then you know, you got to leave, right? But yeah, look at you planning like a true pilot. You know, it's like, let's do a cross country trip. Let's go check the weather. How long is the drive between Salt Lake and Arches National Park?
It's about 4 hours. It's about a 4 hour drive.
4 hours?
Yeah.
So it's about the same distance between, well, actually, Salt Lake and Vegas is about five. I think it's a little five or something like that. I think it is.
Yeah, it's about five. Yeah, five, 6 hours.
And then Denver is like eight.
Depending on how much you want to stop. Yeah. But yeah.
And Denver's right. And I'm talking about minimal stopping. I usually do these trips because I have to move cars around or I'm doing like repositioning stuff like after training. But at the last time, it took me about 5 hours between Salt Lake and Vegas, and I literally stopped twice. Like restroom, gas, let's go. So if you're stopping more because your passenger princess wants to, or prince, that you want to stop because I want to get a snack or something, it's going to take you a hot minute. And I'm so tired of driving now. When I was younger in my 20s, I was like, yeah, road trips. But now I'm like, oh no, I turned a 14-hour drive into a 2-day trip because I stay at a hotel and just rest. Now I'm thinking it more of like, am I fit to drive? You know, am I fit to actually do this drive? And I decided just kind of break up those really long drives into 2 days so that way I can get some rest. So this is the only time you've used your NAMRA benefits to go to Alaska?
That was the second time, actually. And the first time I had...
Okay, how the first time go?
You know, it was actually a lot better than the last time I went, but... I still got bumped off one of the flights. One of the passengers shows up for their seat. So they got bumped off. And we had to take the next flight. I think it was like 3.5-4 hours later. There were like 6 seats open, so we got it. We got our own window seats and everything, and we got out of there. And what's funny is that the plane that we were supposed to originally take to Salt Lake was a mainline, or the 737, and it got stuck in Salt Lake for the night because on its return leg back to Seattle, it had flap issues, and then it came back to the gate and it was stuck there overnight.
Oh wow. Was it a max?
No, it was actually a 900ER. So but surprising.
When you're a non-revver and you're waiting and you're just super tight and you know there's only enough seats available for you and whoever you're traveling with, and you're just pacing the gate hoping that passenger doesn't show up, and when that gate agent is calling the passenger's name, it's like, Mr. Johnson, last call for Mr. Johnson. I'm like, shut up, stop calling them. I don't want him to show up, right? Because that passenger's probably rushing through security to get through their flight, right? So it's happened to me a couple times, and I've made it. Luckily, I remember the trip I went. We're supposed to go to Sydney. We ended up going to Hawaii, then to Guam. But we literally got the last two seats, and they were kept calling these people, and I was like, please just shut up, stop calling their name, because I want to get on this plane.
Just put
and we
us ended on up getting on.
So it worked out for us, but it can be really nerve wracking, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you live for it, hey. More power to you if you live for that kind of adrenaline rush of maybe not making it to your destination. Because in retrospect, you're like, oh, that was kind of funny. You have stories to tell about it because of stuff like missing a plane or missing a flight. But at the moment, you're just stressing out. You're like, I just want to get home. Like, I just want to be able to go back to work or something. I don't want to get in trouble with work because I didn't show up because I missed a flight because I got bumped off, you know, from a flight. But it's still fun, and it's a really good perk to have with the airline that you're working for. So definitely take advantage of it, but know that you may have to end up somewhere else that you don't want to be or getting bumped off. And, you know, like Mike, all of a sudden the passenger shows up, and now guess what? We're not going.
Yep.
We're not going. So let's switch gears. So Micah is a pilot. He is on his way to being a professional aviator.
So I'm working on doing my my nighttime cross country right now. And honestly, the kind of whole thing going through it up until now has been really cool, because I'm going through part 61, so that means I can just kind of do it at my own pace. And I'm also not limited to, when I do my cross country, I'm not limited to kind of what airports I can fly to. So that means I've been able to fly into these really cool, pretty airports, and like really small ones that are kind of, you know, a little challenging to fly into. So far I've been able to fly into Malad, which is actually just got repaved, but it's got like a 50 foot wide runway, and it's like 4,000 feet long, and it's got this little shack for an FBO. And then Afton.
Malad too. Is that VOR? There's a Malad VOR, right? MLD.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it that? Is it the same one I'm talking about?
Yep.
Malad
in Idaho.
MLD. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just on the border of Idaho and Utah. I think the VOR is a little farther away from the airport. I think it's on top of a mountain somewhere, which makes sense. But
right.
Afton, Wyoming was really cool. I mean, going there, you go over all of the mountains, trying to get over there, and I got rocked a little bit by the mountain wave turbulence, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, going in there was really pretty, because it's set in this little, this really tiny valley, and the mountains right next to the airport are like right there. And so you only got one way to go if you're climbing out or coming in, and it's like left going north and right going south. that's really cool,
right? Because you talked about 61 or par 141,
right?
So what did you have, was 141 an option for you, or what made you choose par 61?
Yeah, initially 141, I thought about it. I went to the University of Utah, and I kind of looked at their flight training program, and I talked to it was one of the heads for the flight training program, and I was talking to her about it, and she mentioned that in order to get accepted, you have to be a junior, and they only accept about 40 students a year. So I'm like,
wow.
Oh, I don't know if that's, you know, really for me, because, you know, that's a really low number to get accepted, especially being in your junior year too. You know, you're halfway through your degree already. So I decided to just do Part 61. It can be a lot cheaper, and I can just do it, you know, however I want to, essentially. You know, I can work with my busy work schedule, also I don't have to take out a loan for it. So that's what I've been doing. I've just been paying out of pocket so far.
Part 61 is definitely more flexible. You can do it at your own pace. It's not as accelerated as 141, because 141 has a lot of restrictions. And as you mentioned, 141 also restricts the airports you can go to. So they have a list of airports you're only approved to fly into. So you can just decide to go to this airport, and it, I guess it's just for insurance purposes for the school. But Part 61, for me as an instructor, it was easier, because it's just a lot. It gives you the freedom and more flexibility to deal with students that, for example, let's say that a student is struggling with their landings, right? So I am not going to hold them in stage one of flight training. Just because they're not, you know, nailing their landings, I can move forward as a Part 61 and include landing training at other airports. So when we're doing our cross country somewhere else, we can practice landings there, right? We don't have to stick to the pattern, as 141 often does, is that they limit you. As like, if you cannot pass a stage one check, you cannot move forward to the other fun stuff of cross country flight planning and going to other airports. So it's restrictive in that sense. There are some pros to 141 that it's more, requires a little bit less time when you're going into your commercial and stuff, but it's really flexibility. Like Micah said, is like, for him, the choice was kind of a no-brainer to go to Part 61, just because it was harder to get into that program at the University of Utah. 141 is very accelerated, so you can get it done like super quick. And they often require a very hefty initial financial investment also to be able to do that. So if you're not in that situation, then Part 61 is more for you, because you can kind of work and pay as you go. You know, what has been the most challenging thing for you in flight training?
Honestly, it's probably just studying ground, honestly. Going through all my notes over and over again. That's really been the hard part, because, you know, you like, you're the one who likes flying all the time. You know, flying is the fun part, and reading all the regulations and everything is the boring part. But I mean,
yeah,
I find it kind of fun to learn new regulations, but I mean, all the ones that you kind of read over and over again just to get locked in your mind, it just kind of gets annoying after a while. But I mean,
right,
I took my written actually not too long after I talked to you the last time, and I passed that. I got an 87, I believe. So
nice.
Yeah, I passed that.
Very good.
I haven't really studied much since then, so I got to kind of get back into the rhythm of that. But
Once you pass a validation or something, you brain dump everything, yeah, and just like, let's do the fun stuff. Let's go fly.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, there's times you have to get in the books. I have to force myself to get back in the books, right? So when I just went up through upgrade training, I had to go through all the op-spec stuff that we don't like to talk about because it's boring. But you have to force yourself to go into it and talk about all these things that you don't usually talk about, like deriving alternate minimums and exemptions for weather for a second alternates and stuff like that. And you're like, you know, bang, 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 click, 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 reload, bang, bang, bang. You know, yeah, it's like, it's so boring, but you got to do it. But when you start digging a little bit more deeper, hot take on this one. I think you find it boring because you don't understand it. What do you think about that?
I think I agree with that on some aspects, but I think some other parts of that is you find it boring because you already understand it, and maybe the book is trying to teach you something different than you understand. So I guess it kind of correlates, but you just don't want to learn the new parts about it.
The way that I see it is it's kind of like math, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people are like, I hate math. Why? Because they don't understand it. And the people that really love math are the ones that are really good because they understand the concept of it and they really like it. They're really good at math because they understand, and the people that hate it is because they're like me. I'm lazy. I don't want to learn math, right? So I don't like math. To a certain degree, I do. But even like simple top of my head fuel calculations, like I always have to like remember what those fuel calculations are so I can kind of do them in my head. But I think that once you understand a topic and it doesn't become boring anymore, you're actually like, oh, okay, I get it. And you like start teaching it to others. So, but I can see when, and here's the thing, and I kind of agree with you with like, you already know it, but then you read somewhere or a manual or someone tells you and they tell you a different version of it, and you're like, now I have to go back and read it again, make sure that I'm right or that I understood it correctly, so that way I don't get it wrong in a test or something. So I found myself doing that. You know, I'm teaching something and they say, well, I thought it was this, or we start a discussion about how they think it's that way or how they interpret it and how I interpret it. So now we start digging back into the SOPM and then start looking into it, and you're like, I have to go dig into it. So it can get, how I wouldn't say boring, but maybe more like annoying.
Yeah,
definitely. To actually annoying. Go in there and start looking for that kind of stuff. So that's the most difficult part for you. What's the most fun you've had in a plane?
Probably my stepbrother. He used to take me up every once in a while. He's a pilot for SkyWest now, but when he was a CFI, he would, he took me up a couple times, and we used to do a bunch of like, zero G maneuvers. That's really fun. I like to hold my phone in my hand and just let it fly around the cockpit. that's really probably the funnest thing you could probably do in an airplane. I don't know about a 175. Yes. I don't know. You could try it in one of that maybe, but
you can do it in the sim. You can do it in the sim. We don't do that out in the line, but I mean, I've had pilots that I've seen that either if you press, depending on the mode that you want to descend on, you'll definitely feel like lighter in your seat just because you selected the wrong flight in the wrong vertical profile, or what do you call it? The wrong, I wouldn't say wrong, but maybe not the optimal way to descend an airplane.
Right.
And typically if you're like in the flight level, like in the 30s, and you hit flight level change,
you, that plane is going to pitch forward and you're going to be doing 5,000, 6,000 feet a minute. Oh, and yeah. You're going to be like, whoa, you're going to feel it. So you can do that to a certain extent, but in the sim, we do everything, right? They roll us, you know, inverted, and we do barrel rolls and all this stuff. It's really fun. Speaking of zero G maneuvers, I saw a video last night. I think it was an Instagram reel, and someone, they were doing spins, and the spins are fun getting into the spin, but recovering from it because of all the additional G's you're putting on your body, it made me sick. So every time I do spins, I get nauseous. So I don't like doing spins because of the recovery. Who, your brother, you say, is he flying the CRJ or the ERJ?
He's flying the Embraer.
Oh, really? Yeah. Where's he based?
He's based here in Salt Lake. He was based in Seattle.
Did he just finish IOE?
I think he finished IOE back in either September. No, October. I think October or November. Somewhere around there.
Okay.
And he was based in Seattle for a little bit, and then he got approved to transfer down here. But he lives up in Pullman, Washington, so he has a little bit of a commute. And sometimes he'll commute on our flights, and so he'll mess with me from up in the cabin or like from the gate and stuff, sending me videos or pictures of me. I look at my phone afterwards, and I'm like, oh my God.
So wait, if he lives in Washington, does he just want to be based in Salt Lake? Is that where he wanted to be based?
He just wanted to be based in Salt Lake.
Okay, so but he doesn't mind commuting, huh?
I guess not.
I'm like, why would you do that to yourself? Because you got Seattle, man. I mean, that's a junior base. Seattle tends to be a junior base for SkyWest. On the news, actually, this is probably not on the news, but SkyWest is opening an Austin base.
Really?
That was announced yesterday. Yeah, we are opening an Austin base. We're going to be doing supporting Delta operations out of Austin. So SkyWest is growing.
That's crazy.
And we got 20 new planes coming from, we're actually taking these planes from Mesa. We're getting a bunch of Mesa airplanes, ERJs.
Wow.
And so we're going to be using those for United operations. So Mesa can't fly them, so we're going to go and fly them for United. So yeah, that's the news. I was looking yesterday. I was in the training department. I was looking at my phone, and I saw our website, and it says, hey, yeah, if you want to bid for the Austin, I think there's going to be 30 lines available in Austin. So we're going to be doing that out of there. So it's pretty exciting. The student that was validating yesterday, he actually lives in Austin, and we were doing some target training afterwards, and I said, hey, you heard the good news? He's like, no, what happened? He's like, we're opening an Austin base. He's like, no way. He's like, yep, we're opening an Austin base. And he's like, oh my God, he was so happy. He was happier that we're opening an Austin base than the fact that he passed his validation. So he was that stoked about it. He's like, yeah, I'm really excited for that. I have some hot takes. Some of you sent me emails, and there's one of them right here that I really like. There's a few hot takes for aviation, and I want to talk about this and see what you think. Manny, hey, good job on the show. I appreciate the input on some of these aviation hot takes. Paul. Hey, Paul, thank you for reaching out. So I have one. The first one, the window seat is the best seat. What do you think?
Yeah, he's right. Why wouldn't he be right?
Really? I disagree. Option. And I'll tell you why. Okay. As an av geek, solely an av geek. Okay.
Okay.
The window seat is awesome, right? You get to see the views, you get to see the wings, the engines, you get to take cool videos, right? As a commuter, and as a deadheader, that is the worst seat you can possibly have. Why? Because I personally want to have the freedom of being able to move my leg a little bit out to the aisle, or I want to be able to get up and use the bathroom if, you know, I don't have to wake up anybody, right? Or also, if you are, this is more specific to Southwest. Southwest doesn't have any assigned seating. So I like to take the aisle seat. So if I get called to the jump seat, I can just get up without inconveniencing any customers. So for me, that's more important. And I think maybe the novelty of me looking out the window for me is kind of gone, because this is what I do for a living. So I'm like, I don't care to look outside. So for me, aisle seat all the time, every day, 24/7 aisle seat. However, I think you and I can agree that the middle seat's the worst seat.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why anyone would choose that, honestly. If you go in and before you fly, choose the middle seat, you have problems.
Yeah, you're a masochist. You really are. You know, I don't know. I hate, you know, fun story. I've heard that some airlines will pay their pilots when they I think they're non-revving or something. They will pay them extra if they get a middle seat.
Wow.
like they will pay them extra if they get the middle seat. Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny? Isn't that great? So just, I guess, ease the blow of having to sit between two people. Here's my spicy take. I'll give you one. People that close their window shades the entire flight should be disemboweled with a wooden cooking spoon and left out bleeding in the moonlight.
I think that's a little extreme, but no, I agree with that. I don't know why you would sit by the window and close it the whole
flight. Oh, okay.
Just switch.
Right, but here's the thing. If you're watching a movie, okay, I get it in flight. But I was just talking about this with my FO the other day. I said, because they deadheaded us, and we were just, I had the aisle seat, thank God. It was a CRJ-200, so whatever, right? It's a stupid Greyhound bus. I don't like that plane. So I got the aisle seat, thankfully. So I was, we were deadheading. The guy next to me was playing on his iPad. He was playing some video games, but he kept the window closed the entire flight. I get spooked every time I can't have any reference of outside when we're landing. So I like to at least, I don't know why, there's just something about me that I need to be looking outside somewhere when we're that close to the surface, to the ground, right? I like to just open the window, look outside, even just for like the last 15 minutes and then land and, you know, okay, you're good to go, you can close the window. But people that keep the window shades closed, it makes me feel even more cluster, like there's this feeling of claustrophobia that comes over me because I can't see outside. Just open your window, you know, and your window shade, and leave it open just for at least for taxi takeoff and landing.
Yeah,
it's not even and some airlines encourage you to keep your window shades open for taxi takeoff and landing, but it's only for the emergency exit rows. Just do us all a favor and keep your windows open. If you want to watch your movie later on, absolutely. Here's another one. Paul says another hot take is like people that wear open toe shoes should be banned from flying ever. It's like sometimes their dogs are out and they be barking. But what do you think?
I think I kind of agree with him. I think I kind of agree with
yeah?
him. Yeah. Where did we go from a society where we all used to dress up in suits and ties and, you know, polish shoes on airplanes to now we're wearing sandals and short shorts and a t-shirt, you know, or a tank top, you know?
Or you're literally wearing your pajamas.
Yeah.
And you're wearing your pajamas and I've seen people wearing like their slides, not their slides, they're literally like fluffy overnight sandals or whatever they're wearing. And they're just, I think they're just gotten too comfortable. And I think it's, you know, people, you know, well, I paid for my ticket. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to worry about, you know, what I look like. And I understand, but you see, because people, oh my God, I've seen the grossest things ever. People putting up their bare feet on the armrests of the other, you know, the person in front. I've seen people put their feet on the bulkhead, you know, wall, whatever, in the cabin. I'm like, this is just gross, guys. Like, come on, you're not at home. We're part of a society.
Yeah.
But this is what has become of our society, ladies and gentlemen. We are now traveling because we want to be comfortable. We're going to be nasty. Did your parents raise you upright or what? What's going on? I don't know, but I think open toe shoes are okay. However, I think a flight attendant that I work with a few months ago said, open toe shoes are not only nasty, but can be dangerous to you because now you're going to get your toes run over by rollerboards. If we have an emergency, you're going to get your feet injured. And people that usually wear open toe shoes, they take them off and they walk barefoot everywhere in the plane, including the bathroom. And that's just nasty. And then they go put their feet on top of someone else. Oh, ew, gross. So definitely, I don't think it's necessarily bad, but just be as a whole, I think you should just be more conscious of how you dress to go to the airport. It's just an opinion. If you do it, whatever. But I'm just like, look at it and I just go, ugh. You know? I'm just looking at these people, like, ugh. You know, it's like, oh my God.
Just to clarify.
So that was it.
I don't go wearing suits and ties on airplanes, but
yeah.
I'm not the one going out there, you know, with a bathing suit on. You know, I get you're going to San Diego, but holy cow. You know, maybe dress a little bit.
That's true. Listen, I'm also not the best dresser. I'm wearing a hoodie that I've had for like over 10 years. Okay? So I'm not the best dresser, but I try to at least wear pants, you know, or somewhat, you know, closed toe shoes, tennis shoes, or whatever. But typically now I have to force myself to go in business casual in case I have to take the jump seat. So that's another thing for us pilots is that If that is an option, or you feel like it's going to be the only option for you to commute somewhere or non-drive somewhere, and you have to go take the jumpsuit, you have to look professional, right? So you have to be some khaki, some, you know, some dress shoes, a polo, or a button-up shirt, shaven also, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. I think the definition of what professional image is also has kind of erased a little bit. I think the image of professionalism, I see people that I've in the training, I've had to correct and say, hey, can you fix yourself in a more nicer way? You know, it's like I try to ask them like what's going on, but I think that image of professionalism that we, or my generation at the very least, thought, it's kind of slipped away a little bit, and it's going towards a place where, because we want to encourage individualism, right? So we want to be inclusive. We're also kind of letting that image kind of veer into different directions, and we can't say anything in fear that we're going to get in trouble with HR. It's like, well, you told them that this not professional looking, and that's their culture. That's how they're dressed. You know, that's how they dress. Yeah. And we're like, okay. But be cognizant about your fellow travelers, guys. Okay. Be presentable. Show up dressed properly for also your destination. Now, like you mentioned, you might be going to San Diego, but don't go in your bathing suit, okay? And I know we were probably going to bed after this long 12-hour flight back to your house, but please don't be wearing your pajamas, right? Please don't be wearing your pajamas. You have any hot takes on the
take with the hard stands?
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
So you say like, yeah?
Yeah, give us the hard
stands. So you say it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if we don't have, you know.
So are we talking hard stands like in Salt Lake? Because they don't have them anymore, right? They don't have, well, I think they might have a few left, right? But I think it's for American.
They don't have the Delta hard stands anymore. They have the Charlie hard stands still. And there's like 5 or 6 of them, I believe.
Okay.
And some cases, they can be a lot easier on ramp than the normal gate. For one, everything is downstairs. You know, you don't have to go upstairs. Everything upstairs kind of comes down to you. So you don't have to send people upstairs or go upstairs to get, you know, claimant gate bags or check bags. They literally just set them right there. That's, and you pick them up, you take them right there. Also, you don't have to deal with the CSAs and annoying you. I'm kidding, but sometimes. But
just kidding, but not really.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of how it is. But also, the pushes out of the hard stands are kind of fun because it's a tighter space. So you get a little bit more of a challenge pushing back that airplane. I mean, it's kind of a different area of ramping, but the hard stands have a special place in my heart. I mean, I don't think I could do them all the time, but you know, every once in a while is pretty fun.
I can see, especially with the whole, you know, gate check bags and stuff, for me that's way easier. Yes, because instead of having to go up the jet bridge and go give them their bags, or it's a little bit harder, it's a lot more work. So I can see that from a ramper perspective being a good thing, but as a traveler and as a pilot, it's a pain in the ass. Because now you have to get on the bus, now you have to go all the way over there, and then you have to, and it's like, and Salt Lake is huge already, right? Yeah. So I remember when I used to commute into Salt Lake, that walk was so long that my watch was like, are you working out? You know, it's like, and I had to say, yeah, let's record an outdoor walk. Why not? Right. So it was like, but as a pilot, and we're glad those hard stands for Delta are gone. And so the trips that I've done at Salt Lake now are like, okay, cool. No more hard stands. But for a ramp agent, I can see that. What's up, nerds? Before I let you go, I have a task for you. I have a challenge. If you can go to the platform where you're listening to this podcast in and go ahead and leave a review, just tap that star, whether it's a 5-star, I like that very much, or a 4, or a 3, or 2, or a 1. It doesn't matter as long as you leave a review and some criticism so I can improve this podcast, because I want the Tailwinds and Sunshine podcast to be your podcast. So go ahead and leave that review now. I also want to give a huge shout out to my friends and coworkers for sharing the podcast with their friends and family. That means the world to me. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Also, if you want to be part of the show, go ahead and hit me up. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. We'll make that show happen. We'll make you a friend of the show. Until next time, wishing you tailwinds and sunshine. See ya. The statements made on the show are my own opinion and do not necessarily reflect those of my employer.